This is the Friday show on KLCC. I'm Rachel McDonald. We've got two guests with us today. Ayelet Amitai is a psychiatric nurse practitioner, and Patrick Ludke is Lane County's senior public health officer. Welcome to both of you.
Happy to be here.
Thanks for having me.
So I want to start with you, Ayelet. Would you describe the work that you do?
Yeah, thanks. I'm a psychiatric nurse practitioner, and what that means is I'm a nurse with master's level training in psychiatry. So I was trained in therapeutic modalities that include psychotherapy and psychiatric medication. And I work specifically right now with folks in the perinatal period, so people who are expecting a baby or who have had a baby or who are experiencing struggles with infertility or infant loss.
When we were preparing for the show, you mentioned that you and your colleagues have been very busy over this past year. Why do you think there's been such a demand for therapists?
Yeah, so I mean, I think there's a number of different reasons. Part of what's going on is because of all of the stressors that all of us have been facing with the COVID-19 pandemic, with a new awareness for those of us who are white of the struggles of BIPOC folks, with the fires last year and a greater awareness of climate change. I think all of us are feeling a sense of threat and fear. And there was a recent poll, I can send you the link, Rachel, that the rates of anxiety in the United States are currently at about 40%. And usually the rate is about 10%. So it's significantly higher across the population than it usually is. And I think there was recently a survey for Lane County specifically that people who are Latinx are expressing, 70% of them are expressing a high level of distress, compared to 40% of white folks. So, you know, the stress of everything that has happened to us individually and in our specific communities over the past year or year and a half is taking a really significant toll. And when we feel like we're in danger, a lot of things don't go well. So it's hard to use our frontal lobes. It's hard to process information and remember stuff. It's hard to regulate our emotions. It's hard to not get irritable. And so many of the people I see are parents who are really struggling with being their best parenting selves for their kids, or people who are saying, I can't concentrate at work. I can't concentrate at school. So there are many ways that these experiences are showing up for us that are making it really hard for us to function. Never mind, you know, losing our jobs, losing our health insurance, these really basic things we need to survive in a society that is based on capitalism. So people are needing help, needing support at a whole host of levels. And therapy is one place that we as a society offer a safe space to ask for that help or support in a vulnerable way. So I think that's what we're seeing now.
Can you talk about access? Are there barriers for people to get mental health care and therapy?
Yeah, there are a number of barriers right now that we're facing as a community. So on the sort of individual level, almost every therapist that I know and every prescriber that I know is full. And many people have wait lists that are full as well. And that is a huge barrier, because if there's no one to go see, how can clients or potential clients get the support? So I think we're doing our best to address, you know, reach out to one another as therapists and say, can you take someone? Are you full? But there are some systemic issues that need to be addressed as well. So for example, Oregon Health Plan, many therapists are waiting to be approved to be providers for the local CCOs for Oregon Health Plan. So there's interest on the therapist end to be in network with OHP, and there's a huge backlog for approving therapists. And therapists who are in training, who have all their training completed but are working toward licensure, are not eligible to be covered by most insurances, including OHP. So there are therapists who could be working with folks, but they can't access insurance benefits. And for many people, that's a significant barrier. They can't pay out-of-pocket prices for therapy. So I think that as a community, one thing we can be thinking about is how do we create the political will to increase the range of coverage? How do we create true mental health parity? And then how do we create a pipeline of therapists, and in particular, BIPOC therapists, who can serve our BIPOC folks in this community? How do we get therapists to stay here and to serve our population? And part of that is about pay equity, and part of that is about, you know, ideally something like loan forgiveness for therapists in training. We have a great program at the U of O for LMFTs, but getting people to stay is hard if we can't compensate them fairly. And then the last thing is for emergency mental health. We have CAHOOTS, which is an incredible program. We're so lucky to have that program, but we only really have the ER as a space for people in crisis. And Marion County has a psychiatric crisis center. It's like a psychiatric ER where people who are in crisis can go and receive care and start to get stabilized and connected with services. And I think our county could really benefit from that too. So sort of adding more streams of ways to enter care and really inviting more providers to join us here in Lane County could make a significant difference, I think.
And Dr. Ludke, what is public health doing to help with mental health care in the community, or what is its role?
On that last point from Ayelet, and I'm glad she brought it up, we do lack the crisis response system in the mental health space. And we have a group, it's called the Medical Advisory Group, and it consists of the senior leaders of a variety of medical agencies in our county. So our payers like Pacific Source and Trillium, our hospitals, McKenzie and Peace Health, some of our larger outpatient primary care practices, such as the Oregon Medical Group, Nova Health, Springfield Family Physicians. That group is actively looking at how we can work together to create a crisis mental health system. And we absolutely need one. It's great to have CAHOOTS, but we don't have that inpatient ability, the ability to assess and then determine if we can treat them as an outpatient or if they need to come in for a time. So that's one big area that we're working on. And then I would be remiss if I didn't point people to our prevention program within public health. Listeners can just Google preventionlane.org, and we have all sorts of resources ranging from sharing of numbers like the Whitebird Crisis Line and Hourglass Community Crisis Center numbers to specific toolkits that are available. So you can either go to the Prevention Lane or go to the lanecounty.org/toolkit, and you will get some mental health tools to really help.
You know, early on, we were talking about, you know, the pandemic itself obviously is a huge stressor. And Ayelet, you mentioned too, you know, social justice and, you know, the reality of BIPOC individuals maybe not having as much access to care. But also, you know, there's so many other stressors happening that I think kind of make this really challenging. We've got mass gun violence where there's a sense that there's kind of this, you know, this is happening so often. And then we're also just hearing about so many numbers, like numbers of cases of COVID-19, numbers of people who've died. And it's really hard to grapple with those numbers and sort of not become numb to what's happening in the world. And I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on how to sort of prevent that numbness from taking over, or the desire for numbness, which I guess can also lead to other problems.
Yeah, and I mean, I think rates of substance abuse have really skyrocketed in this pandemic as well, because it's so hard to be present to what's happening. So the struggle with being numb or seeking numbness is real. So I appreciate you bringing that up. So I think before we can do anything, we need to be in a space where we are connected to our bodies and our brains. And, you know, I think therapy is one way to learn some of the skills that can help with that. But practicing breathing or meditation practices that kind of bring you into your body, finding, you know, there's a number of different websites that offer tutorials on belly breathing or four square breathing, which is really effective in grounding us in our body. And then I think when we are feeling more connected physically to ourselves, thinking about what do we have the ability to connect to or to control that can help us gain a sense of efficacy, even in the face of so many things that are out of our control. So I know for me, I've started volunteering with the vaccine clinics at the county, and that has been really powerful because seeing all the people drive through has given me a sense of those numbers being real and not so abstract and overwhelming. And then I feel like I'm moving toward making a change in the community for safety. And that helps counter that sense of hopelessness or that sense that there's nothing to be done. And I think art and music and poetry for me are the other thing that help me stay connected to that sense of hope or to that sense of that positive change is possible in the world. But for many people, it's also about, you know, remembering that we are connected to our neighbors, we're connected to the children and the elderly in our community, and there are meaningful ways we can contribute to the well-being of others that can reflect back on us. So whatever it is, finding something that feels like, okay, this is one thing I can do, where at the end of the day, I can say that meant something to me, that was meaningful to me.
You know, Dr. Ludke, we've heard about vaccine hesitancy, and now we're hearing about many people in Lane County who are not getting the second dose of Pfizer or Moderna vaccine. How much is that complicating efforts to get everyone fully vaccinated and achieve herd immunity?
Well, it is a bit of a challenge, actually, and you're absolutely right. Those numbers have gone up early on. In our mass vaccination events, we would have a no-show rate of 1 to 2%. And we would, of course, plan for extra people near the end of the day. So if we got to the end of the day and we'd thawed out some doses, we wanted to make sure they weren't wasted, we'd call in people and use those doses. Now that no-show rate, depending upon where we're going, we go to Florence, we go to Oak Ridge, we go to Cottage Grove, etc., that no-show rate is bumped up to 10, 12, 14% in some sites. So it complicates the logistics of it because we want to make sure we don't waste any doses, and we're really good at not wasting doses. I'm really proud of that. But you also have to find those people because we really want them to get the second dose to ensure they get the maximum benefit from that first dose. We do know that these vaccines are significantly better than our worst fears. We had thought that they would be 95% effective at preventing COVID disease, which is that symptomatic disease where you all feel sick. You have a cough, you have a fever, you have shortness of breath. But we now find out in the real world effectiveness, they not only do that, but they're about 90% effective at preventing COVID infection, which is even better than preventing symptomatic COVID disease. So that's great. But that data is after getting the full vaccine. So two doses for Pfizer, two doses for Moderna. So they're only probably 75 to 80% effective, which is one dose. So we really want to get that bump up into the 90%. So it makes it more difficult for us for many reasons, not wasting vaccine, making sure we can reach out to people and get the maximum immunity, get as much benefit from this resource that our country has put a lot of money in as we possibly can.
And Ayala, what do you think is the underlying psychological reason or emotional reason that so many people are hesitant to get the vaccine or to get that second dose of vaccine?
Oh, that's a really complicated question.
Yeah, I'm sorry to yeah. Spring it on you.
And isn't it time for a break, Rachel? I think it's time for a break.
We can take a break and we can cover it.
I'm happy to answer. So, I mean, I think that we're coming out of a period in our society when our leadership was very anti-science. And so, I think it may be confusing to figure out what is the information or what are the data sources that we can trust. And Facebook and other social media platforms further complicates that because it flattens all sources to look the same. So it can be really hard to know what do I trust? How do I make these decisions? And I think that, Dr. Ludke, I know you're being on the radio, you really try to get the message out, and many people are trying to get the message out in different ways. But if people aren't going to those sources, then those messages are not available to them. And the second dose question, I think, is harder for me to answer, but maybe people are looking at the data and saying, this is close enough, or maybe they were struggling with access issues. And I do think access can be a real barrier in terms of transportation and having the basic pieces of our lives we need to be able to make it to an appointment like that. So maybe it feels like one dose is all people can do.
You're listening to The Friday Show on KLCC. I'm Rachel McDonald. We're joined by psychiatric nurse practitioner Ayelet Amitai and Lane County Public Health's Dr. Patrick Ludke. And I want to kind of go back to this, what we were just talking about regarding hesitancy and also misinformation, because there is a lot of misinformation out there about vaccines, COVID-19, and public health. And maybe we'll start with you, Dr. Ludke, and then move to Ayelet. What do you think causes people to hold on to these beliefs about, you know, what's true and what's not that might not actually have any evidence or science-based proof?
You know, I think it's a really good question. It's a good way to look at this. You can look at problems from many different venues or different vantage points. I think, first of all, it's really important for all of us to be skeptical about anything we put in or on our body. You know, I don't think a week or a month goes by where we don't hear about some product that was tainted with lead, or it's being recalled because of contamination with a bacteria or something. On the one hand, that tells us that our surveillance systems that are making sure products are safe are working. Otherwise, they wouldn't come to our knowledge that there's a contamination. That's a good thing. On the other hand, there's so many products in our life that it seems like there's always a recall or something going on. And that can really be disconcerting to many people. In the vaccine area, there are a variety of reasons, I think, that people will pick up on challenges and hold on to them. First of all, these vaccines did seem to come to market pretty quickly. You know, typically, I think on the radio show before, I remember mentioning one time I waited 25 years for an effective whooping cough vaccine. You know, it's just it takes a long time to get these things right. And if you peer, you know, beneath the hood a little bit, so to speak, you find out that this technology didn't just pop up last year. It's been used for over a decade, especially in the cancer space, where we're using messenger RNA to provide various therapies to humans. It just so happens as a platform that can also work for vaccines. So it's not as new as people think, but it still seems new, and that scares people. New scares people in many ways. In addition, people hold on to a variety of biases. We all have our biases. They help us get through life. I mean, every day we wake up and we have these shortcuts to getting through our life. And some of those shortcuts are based on health reasons, and some on politics, and some on religion, and some on history. And we have built those into our lives. And some of that comes out in the vaccine space as well. But I think having an honest conversation, sitting down with people one-on-one, sharing what we know and what we don't know, because of course we don't have all the data we want, is really the best way forward. And what I often say to providers and nurses, et cetera, that I work with is, you know, before you attempt to persuade, try to understand. And we really need to do that. We shouldn't just say, get this vaccine, you're crazy if you don't. We need to understand people's concerns, people's hesitance, people's questions. And there's an art to that as well as a science.
And Ayelet, do you want to weigh in on this? Just what, you know, the challenges of people kind of holding on to beliefs that might not actually be true.
So I think it's a very complex moment we're in, because we as a culture really value our individual choice, our ability to make our own choices. Based on what we see, what we know. And I think it's important for us to have that sense of agency. And it's really at the core of our culture as a country. And then there's the question of the choice that we're making for everyone around us, when we make our individual choice. And that isn't something that is at the heart of our culture in this country. And when those two things are at odds with each other, it's really hard to know how to negotiate that because we aren't given a lot of models for thinking about that. So, I mean, I agree with Dr. Ludke that I think empathy has to be at the core of this work we're trying to do, because that's the thing that's lacking in the polarization of, you know, the past 4 years of the Trump administration. More and more things were so polarized that we couldn't hear one another speak. And so for there to be healing, we have to hear one another first. Even if we don't understand, we have to hear. Then we can try to find some common ground and sort of say, okay, how do we measure the well-being of all the parties involved and care for one another?
It seems like that could apply to a lot of different aspects of what we've been talking about in terms of the challenges that we're facing is being able to be compassionate and hear each other.
Oh my gosh, I completely agree with that. And that ranges, as you said, across many areas. We have limited resources, so how do we spread them across all the populations that need it? There's compassion in that. There's science in that, too. There's logistics in that. It's really a critical point, especially when we live in a polarized environment from the standpoint of community attitudes and anxiety. And also when we are in an urgent situation where we need to do things quickly to make a difference on the ground.
Well, thank you so much to both of you for joining us. We're going to go ahead and wrap things up. Thanks so much to Dr. Patrick Ludke with Lane County Public Health. And thank you to Ayelet Amitai, who is a psychiatric nurse practitioner here in Eugene.
Thank you, Rachel. And my special thanks to Ayelet as well. Nice to work with you again.
Yeah, good to hear your voice, Dr. Ludke, and thank you, Rachel. I appreciate the time.
Thank you. I just want to end because Ayelet, your business is called Wild Geese Mental Health, after the poem by Mary Oliver, and so I'm going to end the show with her reading the poem. It is the last day of National Poetry Month.
You do not have to be good. You do not have to walk on your knees for 100 miles through the desert repenting. You only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. Tell me about despair, yours, and I will tell you mine. Meanwhile, the world goes on. Meanwhile, the sun and the clear pebbles of the rain are moving across the landscapes, over the prairies and the deep trees, the mountains and the rivers. Meanwhile, the wild geese high in the clean blue air are heading home again. Whoever you are, no matter how lonely, the world offers itself to your imagination, calls to you like the wild geese, harsh and exciting, over and over announcing your place in the family of things.
Mary Oliver reading Wild Geese. This is the Friday show on KLCC. If you have questions for next week's show, please send them to news@klcc.org as an email or voice memo. And you can also leave us a voicemail at 503-877-3198. We had production help from Angela Kellner. I'm Rachel McDonald. We'll have links to information on mental health resources at our website, klcc.org. Enjoy your weekend.